You are listening to The Morning Magazine for Monday, September 6th. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, did you enjoy Boulder's trails this holiday weekend? Are you planning to today? Maintaining those trails is a huge task, and it's not all up to the city. And the CityCast Denver crew fact-checks the often-repeated claim that Colorado enjoys 300 days a year of sunshine. At the bottom of the hour, we'll hear the latest Jim Hightower commentary just after the BBC headlines, and then it's a public affair. On today's program, Frank Dubofsky speaks with Colorado Attorney General Phil Weiser. And as always on Monday morning, it's Counterspin at 9 a.m., a look at fairness and accuracy in reporting. But first, these headlines with KGNU's Jamie Sudler.
On Saturday, Colorado Governor Jared Polis announced that he has extended his order that provides some housing tenants protection from eviction. The governor's office said in a release that tenants who have a pending application for emergency assistance have 30 days to make past due rental payments instead of just 10 days. Polis's order also rescinds all remaining provisions on unemployment insurance and returns funds over $16 million that was allocated to the Disaster Emergency Fund at the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. The governor's order comes after last week's decision by the U.S. Supreme Court to strike down the federal eviction moratorium. Polis said he was considering extending emergency protection in Colorado beyond September if rental assistance applications are backlogged. Saturday's order is scheduled to expire in about 30 days unless he extends it further. Protesters gathered at the Colorado State Capitol on Saturday to express their opposition to the new anti-abortion law in Texas. The Texas law bans abortions as early as 6 weeks of pregnancy and allows anyone to sue someone who helps provide an abortion. Catherine Riley with the Colorado Organization for Latina Opportunity and Reproductive Rights told the Denver Channel that there is growing interest from Texas women to have abortions elsewhere. Should there be any attempt at a similar anti-abortion measure in Colorado, State Senator Julie Gonzalez, a Democrat from Denver, said that we are strong and united and it won't likely go very far. The Colorado Sun reports that abortion providers in the state say they've begun to see an uptick in calls from Texans, and some believe they could become overwhelmed in the coming months, especially if other states like Florida and South Dakota pass laws similar to that in Texas. The state's redistricting committee released a revised congressional map on Friday evening using the 2020 census data. Among the most notable changes are the redrawing of the second congressional district, now held by Jonah Goose, Democrat of Lafayette. The district would extend from Boulder and Larimer counties on the east to Moffat and Garfield counties on the west. The new district, if it becomes final, would potentially pit Nagoose against Republican Lauren Boebert of Rifle. And the state's newest district, the 8th, would include North Denver metro area starting in Adams County and then extend northward along the eastern side of I-25. The area would lose bluer parts of the state and gain redder areas that Colorado Public Radio reports could lead to the state's most competitive seat. The 8th district has the highest percentage of Hispanic residents among all proposed districts. The congressional redistricting map must be approved by the Colorado Supreme Court by December 15th. After reviewing several proposals, the City of Boulder and the University of Colorado released a final draft of the CU South Annexation Agreement on Friday. The Daily Camera reports that the document includes new provisions based upon feedback from the community and officials from both the city and the county. The proposed agreement provides that in exchange for the city annexing over 300 acres of university-owned land near US 36 and Table Mesa Drive, CU will transfer property to be used for flood mitigation of South Boulder Creek. Among new provisions in Friday's release is a limit on nighttime events and measures to prevent people from using the property as a bypass to Colorado Highway 93 and Foothills Parkway. The city and the university say the agreement is 99% done. The council is scheduled to hold a public hearing and a second reading on the agreement a week from tomorrow, with a vote set for September 21st. A hearing in the case against the alleged Boulder King Soopers mass shooting defendant that was scheduled to occur this week has been delayed to determine whether he is mentally competent to stand trial. The Daily Camera reports that late last week, Judge Ingrid Bakke ruled that the preliminary hearing in the case against Ahmad Al-Alawi Alisa was set to begin tomorrow will instead be an advisement hearing at which she will order a psychological evaluation. The alleged shooter has been charged with 10 counts of first-degree murder and numerous other crimes after the killings in March at the King Supers on Table Mesa Drive. District Attorney Michael Dougherty tried to persuade the judge that Elisa's mental state is not a barrier to the preliminary hearing, which is focused on whether there is enough evidence to proceed to trial. Dougherty also raised concerns about the public defenders bringing the issue to the court's attention at this time. The DA said that families of the victims in the case had already made travel arrangements for tomorrow's preliminary hearing. Attorneys for the defendant said they believe Elisa suffers from a mental disability and is unable to rationally understand court proceedings. Today until 4 p.m., there is an ozone air quality alert for the Front Range. People are requested to limit driving of gas and diesel vehicles. The weather for today and the rest of the week looks to have sunny skies with no precipitation. Today, the high will be in the low 90s, and tomorrow a little cooler with highs in the upper 80s. Right now, it's about 61 along the Front Range. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Holiday weekends always draw visitors to the area's trail systems, and one of the most popular trails in Boulder County is Mount Sanitas, which receives an estimated 118,000 visitors each year. All this use wears on the trail system, and maintenance doesn't just fall to the city. Boulder County Open Space Conservancy, or BOSC, was established in 2017 through a private partnership with the City of Boulder Open Space and Mountain Parks. At a recent outdoor festival, KGNU's Rosanna Longo-Better spoke with BOSC's development director, Allison Duffy.
I'm here today to talk to people about Boulder Open Space Conservancy. We are the official nonprofit partner of the City of Boulder Open Space and Mountain Parks Department. And we are raising funds for mostly trail restoration. We just are launching a campaign to raise funds for Mount Sanitas. Mount Sanitas is one of Boulder County's most popular, most highly visited trail systems in the county. And there is a backlog of restoration projects on the books that needs to happen. And we are raising funds for the work crews, for the stones and tools to be hauled up the mountain, and for all sorts of things in order to improve the trails and so that visitors and residents and people from out of town can continue to enjoy Mount Sanitas to its fullest. And as we all know, from my experience, I am a nature lover. That's why I'm doing this work. But I was out on trail every day last year in 2020. And I know a lot of other people were going outside to get fresh air and to get out of their house and to reap the benefits of nature that nature provides. And so we've seen increased visitor use since 2020. And, you know, with population growth, we just anticipate that visitor use is going to keep going up. And we need to keep taking care of these beautiful, beautiful places and all these amazing trail systems and habitat so that future generations can enjoy this beautiful place as we have.
Is there going to be a modification on those paths so that, let's say, people with disabilities can access that part of the mountain that is so gorgeous with views that are unique?
That is a great question. I actually have a printout here that talks about the restoration work that's happening on Mount Sanitas, and I'm not sure about any projects that are happening for folks with disabilities, though I know it's probably in their master plan. They've spent over 15,000 hours hauling material, building structures, and repairing treads since 2016. So all these repairs and projects on Mount Sanitas have been needing to happen for a long, long time, and they've already started working on it. A lot of the money raised is going to go towards hauling the materials up the mountain. So right now, they use these rope rigging systems to haul these giant stones up the mountain because these things weigh like tons and people can't just carry them or you can't put them in the back of a truck. And so we actually, oh, here's a dedicated rigging setup for highlining. They call it flying stone. So the cost of that is $2,000 to $7,000 alone. Yeah. They want to start using a helicopter to haul supplies and heavy materials and stones. And the cost of that is about $20,000. And they also use Youth Corps to work on the trails and the restoration. And so they learn, you know, leadership skills and work ethic and how to be on time. And they're also out there, like, you know, using their muscles and chiseling stone and making steps to get up the mountain. And so we'd be employing Youth Corps to work on Mount Sanitas. But that's expensive too. So, and it's a first job for a lot of those kids.
Something that's going to take time and a lot of money too.
Yes.
But it will be super rewarding. Why? Because Mount Sanitas in this case is used all year long. It's not only used during the summer, but it's used, and I can assure you, during the winter. Yeah. Because when the snow comes down, those mountains look amazing. The restoration, as you're explaining to me, it has been planned for a long time.
Yeah.
Since 2016. Mm-hmm. What's at stake if this restoration doesn't happen? Because we don't have the funds to pay for this.
These trails have been just very loved by citizens and visitors, and we want these trails to be there for a long time and to be safe and for people with disabilities to be able to use them and get up to the top. And so what's at stake is possibly people in the community not being able to use these trails. So we want everybody to have access to this amazing place. So that's our goal with a lot of these projects, is so that everybody can continue to get on these trails and reap the benefits of this amazing place. That's why a lot of us live here. And it benefits our well-being. And when we have a good well-being, we're a healthy community, and we do good work, and we live a fulfilling life. And that's what's important. That's what makes Boulder, Boulder.
How can people follow you? What's the Instagram, the Facebook? Tell us more.
Look for Boulder Open Space Conservancy on Facebook and Instagram. And the website, again, is www.bosque.org.
Now, here's the hard question. If we already pay taxes to keep our open space surrounding the city, why do we need to raise funds for this restoration?
So we formed in, I think, 2017, Open Space and Mountain Parks 50th anniversary celebration in order to be another income stream to all of their restoration projects. We don't just do restoration projects. That is our main focus, but we also are supporting soil health, and we also are supporting stewardship programs. So there's other programs in play, and it's not just all going to City of Boulder Open Space and Mountain Parks. Those are specific projects that need funding, and they have been reliant on the tax revenue for a long time, and there's a backlog of projects that need to happen, and so we want to help them do that. All of us here, we use these trails a lot. We love these trails. It's time for us to step up and give back.
Thank you. I have been speaking with Allison Duffy, talking about the importance of fixing those trails that we love so much that are around our beautiful city. It's an effort by BOSC, Boulder Open Space Conservancy. For KGNU, I am Rosana Longo. Better.
Coloradans often brag about having 300 days of sunshine every year. But does that claim pass a fact check? In a recent piece for the Denver Post, meteorologist Andy Stein dug in to find out where this myth came from and what, if any, of it is true. CityCast Denver's Bree Davies has more.
Andy, welcome to CityCast Denver.
Thanks so much. I'm excited to be here.
So, Andy, I believe you're not from Denver, right?
I am not from Denver. I'm not. I grew up in Florida on the coast, and then I came out here from the Carolinas about 6 years ago. So I've been here for a good amount of time compared to a few other people, but definitely not a local.
Did you come here because you heard we had 300 days of sunshine?
That was one of the selling points for sure. I mean, who doesn't want to bask in that all day?
I mean, you're from Florida, though.
Right. Right. Well, yeah, the sunshine state, we actually get more sunshine than them, which I kind of knew coming out here. But, you know, sunshine is all kind of relative, which is kind of why the story is really fun, just because there's so many different ways to measure sunshine and do all of this stuff.
So when you first heard this 300 days of sunshine claim, as a person that studies weather, why were you interested, or what did you think about that? That idea, this idea that 300 days of sunshine is something that Colorado really prides itself on.
I honestly thought that it was because we had such a dry atmosphere and climate here. So I really didn't put much stock into the thought, because living here for, you know, the 5 years that I have, pretty much after the first year, I was like, oh, there's a lot of sunshine here for sure. I mean, we get sunshine every day, every morning. There's barely any overcast clouds here. We really don't have that much, you know, kind of stratiform, which is your overcast kind of dreary day kind of weather. We don't have many of those. And so it kind of just made sense to me that we had a lot of sunshine. The 300 days, I guess I just didn't compute exactly how much of the year that was. Obviously, it's only 65 days less than, you know, a full year. But overall, I just kind of thought it made sense and it kind of lined up. And also, we've had, you know, 2017, 2018 were two of the driest years in Denver's history, you know, so there was a lot of sunshine that year. So it almost kind of played out in our favor that we advertised 300 days of sunshine, because that year, those years, we probably did, you know, cross over that, you know, 200 day threshold, possibly. But it kind of just made sense to me.
Can you explain where the 300 days of sunshine claim came from?
So it's this wild story that Nolan Duskin was telling me. He used to be the state climatologist for like 40 years here in Denver. And he, as a state climatologist all the way through the 80s, 90s, 2000s, and, you know, into the 2010s. So he did a little bit of digging. And essentially what happened is they keep a whole bunch of records and newspapers and whatnot in climatological archives and whatnot. And he found a newspaper that was from New York City. I'm not sure if it was New York Times or the Post or whatever. But there was an advertisement in this newspaper that people should come on train to Colorado because we get 300 days of sunshine here. And this newspaper was dated back into the early 1870s. And at that point of the year, or at that point in really just like modern history, you know, there is absolutely no way to measure sunshine except by going outside and saying, oh, look, there's some sunshine out there. So I'm going to say that it's a sunny day. So the claim was just kind of right off the bat, kind of illegitimate and not valid at all. So it stemmed back from this railroad company wanting to bring people to Colorado to attract the people from out east out into the cool western climate that we have here. And the best way for them to do that was to say, hey, we get 300 days of sunshine a year.
So it was just totally a marketing claim.
Just purely a marketing thing. Yep, absolutely. The person who wrote the article for the New York newspaper wasn't a reporter. It was literally just a strategic play from one of the publicists for one of the railroads.
To me, that's such a Colorado story because...
Isn't it?
Yeah, because we're just like, we're really proud of some stuff. And sometimes it's like, oh, right. Actually... That's not even real, but we're really, but you know, it worked.
Yep. It attracted a few of those travelers that came from out east. And then, you know, all it takes is one person saying, oh, the weather actually is really great out here, so why not just keep coming out here and staying out here, you know? And so once one person does that, a trickle-down effect happens, and, you know, unpopular opinion, but now everybody from California and Texas is here, so...
We won't get into that, or we will get like hate mail for days.
I know.
No, I understand. I'm from here, but I get why people want to be here. You know, it's beautiful.
Right, for sure. Absolutely. It's so gorgeous here. The different climates that you can get. Honestly, we do have really great weather here.
Yeah. So you mentioned it before that like counting cloud cover at that time was kind of just walking out and looking up at the sky. Can you talk about how we measure sunny days?
Sure. So I'll kind of go from the early 1900s because the way that we measured sunshine was so cool. It was literally just called a sunshine recorder, and it was this big glass orb that would, you know, take all of the sunshine and reflect it onto a piece of paper, and the amount of burnt paper that was there by the end of the day signaled how much sunshine we had. And so that's just kind of like it taking a magnifying glass to a paper, you know, the sunshine gets enhanced and whatnot. So it was recorded that way for a very long time. That is obviously not the greatest way to record sunshine because of cloud cover out there. And, you know, when you get a passing cloud, it cools things off and then heats things up right away. So it's just not a great way to represent how much cloud cover there actually was. Fast forward into kind of like the 1910s and all the way through the 1990s, it was actually just done visually. People at the National Weather Service offices or forecast offices or wherever else they were recording weather would quite literally just walk outside a couple of times a day and record the amount of cloud cover that they saw in the sky from their point of view. So the issue with that is that it's from their point of view.
It's perspective.
It
doesn't
cover, it's all perspective. Yeah, it's all perspective. So that was done that way all the way through the 1990s, and then this process became automated. And the automation of this, actually, you would think that it would make it a little bit better and a little bit easier, but the sensors that are used to track sunshine need to be cleaned and calibrated so much, and they're just not the instrument that's actually paid attention to that much out of all of the meteorological instruments that there are out there. So even the modern ways of tracking sunshine just weren't really kept up to date. And those really just aren't valid ways to track sunshine. But when I was talking to Nolan Deskin, he was saying that we have 90 COAGMET stations here in Colorado. And a COAGMET is Colorado Agriculture of Meteorology, basically. So it's meteorology practices for the agriculture. And there are 90 stations that actually track the incoming solar radiation. And that actually gives us a very good understanding of how much sunshine comes through. So now we have these really cool instruments that track the amount of radiation, which is a very big instrument with the use of solar and whatnot, especially across Colorado, that is now being used. But the data for these is so raw and is so hard to digest and is just really hard to sift through that it's really hard to, you know, go back and be like, oh, March 3rd of, you know, 2011 was actually a really sunny day. You have to kind of dissect each hour of how much incoming radiation there was and kind of play that all out. So tracking sunshine is just a very hard thing to do.
So in tracking it or looking at, like you're saying, you'd have to break it down by hour and then kind of figure out for the day. What qualifies as a day of sunshine, meteorologically speaking?
So there has been updated definitions for this. And again, it's kind of, you know, based off of your perspective, because 25% cloud cover or less across the sky is considered a clear day. So that measurement is taken at the Denver airport and measures the sky around it. And to be honest, I'm not sure if that measurement goes all the way to Fort Collins and down to Colorado Springs, or if it just goes from like Denver up to Broomfield.
And where do we land then in the reality of the year? It's obviously not 300 days. What do we usually average then?
Adding up what we've seen probably over the last 10 to 20 years, the average comes out to be about 115 clear days. And that means that there could be a few clouds out in the sky generally. It's not a partly cloudy day. It's an actual clear day with just maybe a few puffy clouds around. But yeah, it only comes out to be about 115 days.
That doesn't have as nice of a ring to it as 300 days.
Yeah, come to Colorado. There's 115 days of sunshine here. Yeah, no, it doesn't quite have the ring.
So who cares? Andy, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Oh, absolutely. I hope I didn't ruin too much of your year because there's going to be more cloudy days to come. we might even struggle to get 100 sunny days this year, but you know, we still have great weather.
Noted. Noted. Well, thank you so much.
Absolutely, Bri. It was great talking to you.
You just heard an excerpt from CityCast Denver, the local Denver daily news podcast. Learn more about subscribing to the podcast at denver.citycast.fm or wherever you get your podcasts.
And that does it for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Special thanks to volunteer headlines producer Jamie Sudler, to Rosanna Longo-Better, and to the crew of CityCast Denver. Do you have some feedback or recommendations for us? You can leave a message at our listener comment line at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25.